I'm Seth Friedman, a writer for Comment Is Free, and this is Life Behind the Green Line. This programme comes to you from inside the West Bank, the area conquered by Israel during the 1967 war, and where 2 million Palestinians live under occupation. I've been digging behind the scenes you see on television, finding out how Palestinians have been affected as they strive for normal lives, and I've been learning what efforts are being made to find unity in the region. My journey began in modern, vibrant Ramallah, the de facto capital of the Palestinian Authority.
I was again last night.
We lost. Rohna al Mustafa.
Yeah.
Hussein Ahmad.
Here I was welcomed into the comfortable surroundings of Hindi Mesler's home. In contrast to this environment, Hindi's family village, Naalin, is struggling with the effects of the construction of Israel's separation wall. This wall was proposed as a solution to a wave of terror attacks, but instead of being built upon the Green Line, it snakes deep inside the Palestinian territory, annexing much of their land and water resources.
As it was known that the Israeli army is day after day is more violence against the villagers. The demonstrations they still take they're taking place, and as well this demonstration could not stop the Israelis from building the wall. So every day in protest army are more violent and the work is going on.
Over recent months, Naalin has been the focal point for weekly demonstrations against Israel's plans to expropriate much of their farmland and erect the separation wall through their fields. The clashes often turn violent, and lately there has been an increase in the level of hostilities, leading to at least 2 villagers' deaths at the hands of the IDF. Hindi has been instrumental in organising the demonstrations against the army.
For sure the village is mixed between a sad feeling for the death of 2 children that they were killed last month, and the daily injuries, and as well for sure about losing their land and the coming situation that they will be facing because of building the wall. But as well the village is still determining and to continue the struggle, and they will never give up.
And what do you believe is the true reason behind Israel's construction of the wall?
Well, I believe that the wall is built for more than one reason. One of it is to prevent Israelis and Palestinians to meet, because the Israeli government, through its propaganda, it made a huge gap between Palestinian society and Israeli society. The Israeli propaganda described to the Israeli society that the Palestinians are killers and they wanted to kill them. So they wanted to be sure that they will not meet. And the second reason is to annex, the wall will annex more than 56 Israeli Jewish-only settlements. As well, the wall is built to force ground facts, political ground facts, of the Israeli for the final borders. And building the wall will kill the Palestinian dream of having the Palestinian state in the borders of 1967.
I met Hindi's cousin Abdallah, who also works in Ramallah. He found himself caught up in the aftermath of these clashes with the army, thanks to his role as a medic at the city's hospital, where he treated dozens of injured protesters.
We have so many injuries came to Ramallah Hospital at that time. The injuries are concentrated on the upper side of the body, the head, chest, arms, with rubber-coated steel wallets, live round, from inhalation of tear gas, and so on. Fractures. 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, I remember, a guy with 21 years old was beaten by Israeli and then shot with a rubber-coated bullet in the head. He has a fracture in his skull, with multiple injuries in the face, scratches, bruises. 2 days ago, Ayed Sadiq was shot with 3 bullets in the head. He lost an eye, his right eye.
And is this people of all ages, or it's mainly young men?
Children, babies, every range of age is affected with that.
Do you believe that the villagers of Naalin will be successful in stopping the wall being built?
It's a hard thing to say. We have to try, because it's really hard. We have to do our best here, because it's our land. We have to demonstrate for it peacefully. It's a big area of land which was taken by Israeli. So I hope so that we can do something for the village.
As the violence continues, Abdallah's efforts are crucial in this hospital of few resources. In 2004, I moved to live in Israel because I passionately believed I had a right, as a Jew, to live in the land of my forefathers and follow in the footsteps of countless generations of Jews before me. I still hold this belief today, but I am greatly troubled by the way in which the Zionist enterprise has callously swept aside all who stand in its path. Shouldn't Palestinians be allowed the same basic human rights that Israelis enjoy?
Salam. Ahla khaled.
My next stop illustrates the hardships Palestinians face in this region. Tawani is located deep in the South Hebron Hills. This is one of the poorest places in the region, with crumbling buildings, high unemployment, and little prospect of economic recovery. Here I found that the residents faced almost daily attacks from the settlers. In Tawani, several groups of international aid workers are present, including Ida, a Danish volunteer with the International Solidarity Movement.
It's important to go out with the shepherds as an international because they're very often in this region has problems with the settlers attacking the shepherds and the soldiers throwing the Palestinians away from their land. And for this reason, when there is somebody with an international face and with a camera, maybe the situation will develop like different. I think, as I see it, they try and suppress the Palestinians as much as they are able to in order to like disable them to resist the occupation. I think they are succeeding pretty well.
I'm Joshua Huff. I work with Christian Peacemaker teams in the village of Atuwani. What we do here is assist the people of this village and nearby villages with the problems they have resulting from the nearby settlements, Israeli settlements that are expanding and increasing in number. And with that expansion is more and more problems from the settlers and also from the soldiers and police who are always present here in order to protect the settlers.
What would you say the reaction of the settlers and more importantly the army is to your presence in the area?
For the most part is only hostility. There are very few settlers who are willing to engage in dialogue with us or with the Palestinians. The settlers in this area tend to be the most kind of extreme in their ideology and in the project they're pursuing of cleansing the land of non-Jewish inhabitants. The reaction from soldiers and police tends to span a wider range from willingness and openness to engage in dialogue with us and with Palestinians to something more akin to the settlers. It seems that the Palestinians who have historically suffered the most violence from settlers and soldiers tend to have less hope, tend to be more defeated. It's actually pretty rare for me to, from my experience, to run into any Palestinians who are still holding out a large degree of hope for an ultimate favorable resolution to this problem. It appears to me that the vast majority of them really do believe that that the occupation is permanent, and they're willing to hold on to some hope for little successes, for maybe a cessation of settlement expansion in this area, for example. They have given up hope for removing the settlements. They simply want to live in peaceful coexistence.
But activists in Palestine are not just from the international community. Ehud Krinis is a veteran Israeli activist who established the Villages Group in order to provide solidarity with the Palestinians of the South Hebron Hills region. As an Israeli Jew, he and other activists in similar positions face widespread condemnation from members of the Israeli public who consider him to be a traitor just because he extends a helping hand across the divide. Despite the criticism, Ehud and his colleagues are undeterred in their mission.
The Villages Group just developed when we understand that going to the fields and confront the army and the settlers and enable the shepherds just to use the farmers just to use their field, and especially during the olive harvest season here in particular, the Israelis don't want to give them any services. And the Palestinian Authority, because it's the area and because it's remote and small, doesn't take care about this area. So everyday needs like electricity and water and transportation services for children to school and helping students. And we just from a very close and intimate relationship with people here, we understand that there is those needs that are not answered by other organizations here. This summer was a very hard summer because there is some conditions that came together that make life here very, very hard. We're talking about 100% of shepherds communities, and above the ongoing situation that their grazing areas are more and more limited by the settlements and settlers taking more, grabbing more and more land from the shepherds here, which is an ongoing process. You got in the last 2 years the process of the rising, the global crisis in the price of food, which really have a very strong effect here on the shepherds having to buy food for their animals and have to spend much more money than they did the years before. And above it, also a very, very severe drought this year. So during a few months a year, they could take their herds to graze in the fields, but this year they didn't have anything to graze, yeah? Because not much was grow here during the winter, but there was no much rain.
On several occasions in the past, I have spent time with Ehud and have witnessed firsthand the massive impact his work has had on the lives of the locals, as well as challenging many Palestinians' perceptions that Israeli Jews are indifferent to their suffering. I live in West Jerusalem, and I made the short trip here to meet Sarit Michaeli, another Israeli who faces criticism for her role in providing assistance to the Palestinians. She works for B'Tselem, a prominent Israeli human rights organisation, which has for many years been working to highlight the human rights abuses prevalent in the West Bank. Her efforts as B'Tselem's media coordinator have resulted in both the local Israeli press and the international media at large paying much more attention to the plight of the Palestinians living under occupation. B'Tselem's highly successful Shooting Back project is a case in point. Palestinians are given video cameras to document the violence they suffer at the hands of settlers and soldiers.
Main activities are the research and the production and dissemination of information about human rights violations in the occupied territories. We focus primarily on the responsibility of the Israeli authorities, of our government, for human rights violations in the occupied territories, although we do deal with other actors as well, with Palestinians who violate human rights. Although, as I said, most of the research focuses on our responsibility. I think Shooting Back has had a very large impact on the ability to work for human rights in the occupied territories, although we're still very, we have a long way to go. The Israeli security forces, and especially the law enforcement bodies, the police, have had public pressure applied on them through the public seeing this footage, and that has made the police, in some cases, to do its duty, you know, to investigate and bring to justice suspected attackers, settlers who've harmed Palestinians or have attacked their property. Still, I have to say, there will have to be a systemic change in the way law is enforced in the occupied territories, in the West Bank, in order for the Israeli security forces to really adhere to their duty of protecting both Israeli settlers and Palestinians from attacks in the same geographical area. At the moment, they're doing it very well in terms of protecting Israeli settlers. They are failing in their duty to protect Palestinians from attack. I think it has allowed us to try and convince the Israeli public that very often what is being touted as, you know, rotten apples or one-off, you know, events are far from it. They are evidence of a systematic problems in the way the Israeli security forces operate in the occupied territories.
Asirto.
I think many Palestinians who are participating in the video project and shooting back have been incredibly empowered by the ability to participate in the recording of the violation of their rights, from being witnesses or reporting in retrospect. They're able to use a tool that will convince either law enforcement bodies or the public, both Israeli and international, of the truth of their experiences, of the fact that they have their rights have been violated, and I think that's incredibly important. Shooting back has also had an impact on their own communities. I mean, very often the cameras become a focal point. Very often families all learn how to film together, communities learn to do it together, and very often, in fact, women and girls film very important footage. This is because very often they're the ones who are at home, present when, you know, the attack occurs. And I think it has been incredibly empowering to some of them. However, I have to also say that in some cases it has put families at risk. Very often settlers will now attack people who are carrying cameras and are filming. Soldiers have confiscated tapes, have been aggressive and abusive towards people filming through shooting back.
I'm Adam Taylor, media coordinator for the ISM. I think more people should come and see for themselves and be able to go back to their own communities and talk with a level of credibility of, this is what I've seen, these are my photos, these are my videos. And yeah, engaging in, you know, and obviously trying to pressure our own governments, our own community representatives to exert some sort of pressure, you know, for the, you know, implementation of international law, but also to combat the very clear racism that's very apparent within the way that people view the, you know, the situation here. So people have to challenge that. I think people should be building a grassroots movement, a global grassroots movement that can offer the solidarity and support that people in Palestine very dearly need, because they feel, you know, from everyone I've spoken to, people feel very forgotten.
My final port of call was the Palestinian city of Jericho, deep inside the West Bank, on a plain not far from the Dead Sea. Jericho boasts the only casino in the region, which used to be a regular source of much-needed income before the Second Intifada broke out. Since then, the city's economy has suffered in a similar way to the rest of the West Bank, with Israelis banned from entering the area and Palestinian trade brought to a near standstill by the restriction on movement imposed by the army. Saeb Erekat is the chief negotiator for the Palestinian Authority and has for years been involved in efforts to resolve the decades-old conflict. We discussed his forecast for the future of the region.
You can't bring a horse to the river. You cannot force them to drink. You cannot. You cannot force people, peace on people. You cannot. The minute they reach the conclusion that they need and they have an interest, they'll do it. And the need and the interest will not be defined other than the choice, settlements or peace. Settlements or peace, they cannot have both.
What do you think about the people who sign off on building new settlements, knowing full well that that antagonises whether it's the local displaced villagers or the Palestinian people as a whole?
I think these people realise that they delay and undermine the attempts to reach an agreement.
And that, so you think that's what they're trying to do, to delay and undermine it?
I think so. They're not ready. Those who go the path of settlements are not ready to reach an agreement. And they undermine the peace process, yes. But settlements and peace don't go together. So it's either peace or settlements. You know, either we continue settlements and shut up and don't speak about two-state solution, or speak about two-state solution and shut the work on settlements. You don't have no option. Well, the Israelis, where do they want to stay? Where do they want to stay? They want to stay in the West Bank, and the settlements here? They want to stay in Israel proper that are recognized? They need to define this. They need to have a definition of this. And that's up to them. I cannot force them. I cannot force them to sign peace with me. I cannot force them to stop settlements, all right? I'm asking Britain to stop importing settlements products, just to act decently and with international law, the civilized countries, the values of the West, and so on. To know that this is the biggest breach of international politics and international law, and yet Europe has not been able to stop importing from settlements in occupied territories. Well, I think by definition, nation states must be obligatory to international law. And settlements are a violation of international law. So the products of these goods and importing them is a violation of international law.
Fine, but so you're...
But how many writers in Britain have written about this in The Guardian, for instance? Wall Street Journal? Nobody, nobody. Well, you don't touch these things. You don't touch these things. You and then you come to us and ask, why do they hate us? You don't see what you do. You don't see what you think. I mean, and this problem here is becoming to be so difficult on all of us. Because I believe there are two elements that are playing in this region that will determine whether it goes in the hands of Bin Laden or in the hands of us. Peace between us and the Israelis and democracy in the Arab world. These are the two elements. You're not going to defeat these forces with guns and marines and British and American and gun ships and planes. You don't. You don't. You never defeat such forces with such weapons. They win.
Time is not on the side of Palestinians like Hindi and Abdallah in the West Bank. With every passing year, the Israeli occupation erodes even more of the local economy, destroying the livelihoods of thousands of Palestinians, cutting them off from their families in other cities, and bringing more and more settlers to dwell in their midst. Back at Hindi's home, I asked him what message he had for the people of Israel.
They should come and see how people live. In West Bank and Palestinian territories, people are suffering on a daily basis because of the Israeli army. The Israeli army that is saying that they are protecting the Israeli civilians, but in fact they are violating on a daily basis the human rights of Palestinians. In the past, Muslims, Christians and Jews has been living in this land, and I do believe that they still can live together in one land. People are very aware of the coming situation that they will be living, which is a very humanitarian disaster. It will be in Nalin. Nalin will be surrounded from four sides by wall, settlements, bypass road, and the tunnel. This tunnel will control the entrance and exit of people, of residents of Nalin every day.
Through my time in the West Bank, I learned that the settlement enterprise is the largest thorn in the side of the Palestinians and is the biggest sticking point in terms of bringing a successful resolution to the conflict. While the commendable efforts of Ehud and Sarit show that not all Israelis are apathetic to the suffering, the Israeli public largely ignores the plight of those on the other side of the Green Line. While the international community is happy to condemn Israel's actions, but reluctant to match their critical words with punitive measures, there is little cause for hope amongst the Palestinian populace. Those few activists and aid workers who operate on the ground provide an invaluable service to those they assist. However, their efforts are at best palliative care and at worst a vain attempt to stem the ever-encroaching tide of Israeli settlements and occupation. As a citizen and resident of Israel, I am convinced that the more my government antagonises the Palestinians, the more their actions endanger the lives of the Israeli public. Perpetually oppressing and subjugating the Palestinian population is guaranteed to reap a harvest of resistance and terror. As the people I have met in this programme show, there is little chance that Palestinians will ever trust the intentions of Israeli governments who sign peace agreements with one hand whilst digging the foundations for more illegal settlements with the other. The only viable option to bring the two sides close to any lasting accord is for the Israelis to leave the occupied territories once and for all, freeing the Palestinians from the yoke of occupation and allowing them to rebuild their shattered economy, society and lives.